Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking to Curtis Dowling. He's the host of the CNBC show Treasure Detectives and an art forgery detective specialist. He's usually in LA, but he got up super early to talk to me from London about art authentication. Enjoy. I've never been smart with investments or stocks, but one thing I've learned over the years is that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. If you want to get smart with your money, you can trade smarter and maximize your returns with Trade with UFOs. Trade with UFOs is a brand that represents a community of users trading with predictive tools. You don't have to be good with stocks. They literally hold your hand while you trade, teaching you everything you need to know. You see, Trade with UFOs is also a portal which provides access to predictive apps, courses, and coaching, all to show you how to make money using unfilled orders. Why am I so passionate about this? Because then we'll all have more money in our pockets to buy more art. It's time to get smart with your money. Leverage your success with Trade with UFOs. Go to tradewithufos.com and use my offer code Brooke for a 50% off discount on all of their products. That's B-R-O-O-K-E.
Hey, Curtis.
Let's get the video on.
Hang on one second.
Look at that. It's all very clever, isn't it?
Oh, I always mess those up, and I apologize.
That's right. Well, actually, I couldn't do any of it. So the fact that you've connected is real because I couldn't do any of it. So good afternoon from England somewhere.
Good morning in America. Awesome. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk to you.
Morning.
So how's your morning, your day so far?
Well, it's Sunday, so it's all just been very quiet and English breakfast. But yeah. we flew in from Boston, I can't remember, a few days ago, and then we're here until next week, and then we're in Munich, Zurich, home.
Wow.
So, that's the thing, you see. It's really funny. We've done this for... I say we, it's me and Andy, the guy you've probably seen on Treasure Detectives that used to be a very big guy, but now he's a very small guy.
Yeah.
And we've done this. This is our 36th year.
Wow.
And when we were filming Treasure Detectives, a guy called Jim Ackerman came out. He was running CNBC Prime. And he sat down with us, how's it going? I said, yeah, great. We're sort of through third episode. And he said, this show will change your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but I can't see how, Jim, because I've done this now already for over 20 years.
Right.
I don't want to be in OK magazine. I don't want to be a celebrity. I don't want another series. We're doing the show because we wanted to do the show.
Right.
We're not doing the show to try and end up on some sort of celebrity game show. And he said, no, you'll see what I mean as the years go on.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand what he means. Before we made Treasure Detectives, I did look quite a lot of English TV. Before we made Treasure Detectives, we would get maybe five or six good, solid inquiries every week
mm-hmm.
for us to go and do our job somewhere.
Right.
Since Treasure Detectives, it's never been less than 100 a week.
Okay.
And it's some weeks, it's 200 a week.
Oh my God.
So we're getting between 400 and 800 requests a month.
Oh my gosh.
For our service. I know. And it just has never stopped. And I spoke to Jim Ackerman about 2 or 3 years ago before he finished at CNBC and moved on somewhere else. And I said, I get it. I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Because it kind of turbocharged us.
Uh-huh.
I've got a list of probably 3,000 or 4,000 people that said, when you're available, would you come and do your job? Because we can't, there's only two of us. We can't do more than...
Everywhere.
You know, yeah, that's right. I mean, so this year, you know, already in the last 3 months, 4 months, we've been to Turkey, Saudi, Laguna Beach.
Oh my God.
Vienna 3 times. Boston, Berlin, Saudi Arabia, New York, London, the list goes on.
Wow.
And we say yes if it looks like it's a really interesting piece.
Uh-huh.
And we say And I have to be a bit naughty. I say yes if it's a place I've never been and want to go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's natural.
So I think, oh, I've never been to White Horse in Canada. I'm going to go there. So, if the piece is interesting enough and it looks like it could be genuine, of course, and the location seems fun, then mm-hmm. you think, yeah, that's good. So that's how we judge where we go, you see, whether it looks great. Because I don't want to, you know, there's certain places you think, oh, not there again. How many times can you go to Scottsdale in Arizona?
Right.
So if someone says, for example, there's the thing. Okay, so we're going to Jamaica in a couple of weeks to meet somebody. Yeah, Goldeneye, where Ian Fleming wrote the James Bond books.
Oh, wow.
And at the same time, we had a request to go and meet someone in Detroit. You know, and you think,
not a hard choice.
No, not really. And the suitcase is so much smaller for Jamaica, isn't it? But there we are. Do I have waffled enough? I'm sure you've got lots of questions you want to ask.
Yes. Well, first to start off, I want to ask, is fine art and antiques the same thing?
Yes, let's keep it simple. That's what art doesn't do. Art tries to fool people by thinking it's only for people who've gone to Yale. Right. Art and antique is anything that is old.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
There's the mystery over. So the answer is yes.
Okay.
We get asked to do not just painting, but we do all sorts.
Hey, Curtis, I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, I think it's just where I am. The connection sometimes can be a little bit weak. That's okay. All. I can't see you anymore, but can you see me?
I can see you.
That's fine. There's nothing I've touched. Oh, there you are. There you are again. I see you. yes. So in answer to your question, art and antiques, they are the same thing. And just make what we try and do always is to make sure that we simplify what has been turned into a very complicated thing over the last couple of hundred years. Probably just to make people look like they're cleverer than they are, I assume.
Because
I don't understand why, for a second, you need to complicate paintings, antiques, because they're just old stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, basically. So I was watching several of the episodes and it just seems like you're giving a lot of people a bunch of bad news, and you kind of, and how do you deal with that?
Well, we're not deliberate.
I mean, there's good news.
Before, yeah, there you go. See, it depends how you're viewing the show. We set out, I mean, the show, don't forget, is just a really simplified version of what we do.
Right.
If you watched what we do on a daily basis, it's infinitely dull in real terms, because obviously there's a lot of work that needs doing that is not camera pretty.
Mm-hmm.
The show we made is very sanitized. Mm-hmm. We didn't decide how many would be forged and how many would be genuine. We just set out with the journey.
Right.
It turned out to be 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's pretty much when you say yes to seeing a piece, because a lot of the time you can just say no, it's not. When we say yes, let's book a plane ticket, it's always about 50-50. Whether we're at a big museum, whether we're a customer's property, whether we're an art facility or a bank or whatever, the art world is about 50% genuine and about 50% fake. So when we say to somebody, here is the evidence, all we're doing is telling them the truth.
Right.
You know, and that's all they've asked us to do. That's all they've paid for our services for.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it just authentication. You can call it something else. But the truth is, that's what they asked for. So when we go to them and say, hello, Mr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so, here is the evidence and the finished information you required,
mm-hmm.
we're not delivering bad news. In some ways, even if it turns out to be a fake,
mm-hmm.
we've done, it isn't bad news, because they might have spent the last 10 years worrying about whether it's genuine or not. What we've done is we've given them some closure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they might be disappointed. I mean, the good news is, you know, we're not knocking on the door and saying, sorry, Mrs. Jones, but there's been a car accident. You know, it's not real bad news, is it? You know, it's only financial bad news. And, you know, as we go on with our journeys, quite often we will soften the blow of the final reveal by keeping people up to date with what we're doing. So by the time we sit down with them, they've got a good idea which way the wind's blowing. So they've probably had chance to get used to it already. But as I say, it's not bad news. It's just the truth. That's all we deal in.
Right. Well, like when I was watching the guy with the baseball card, and I kind of wanted to cry because that just he seemed like such a good guy, and just like he carried it around, and like he wouldn't let you open the thing. And then there was the guy with the Les Paul guy, and he was like a total jerk to you.
Loony.
How do you handle that? I mean, I don't like it when people are mean to me. I couldn't deal
with it. Well, you see, the thing is, again, it comes back to our job, if you think about it, is just a court case. Okay. We're trying to prove beyond reasonable doubt whether something is guilty or innocent. Mm-hmm. When we have that evidence, when we get to that tipping point, it doesn't matter, does it, if someone's rude or aggressive about it? It's not me. I did have a beef with that guy with the Les Paul because he turned out it wasn't his real name and he was wanted in six. Yeah, he was wanted in six states for sexual offences.
Oh, my God.
So what?
I am glad.
What was he doing coming on TV?
Yeah.
What was he thinking?
That's crazy.
So, I mean, it's funny. Some people, when we are doing our job, do get quite, I wouldn't call it aggressive, but bullish when we tell them the truth. Okay? Right. It's not my truth. I didn't make it up. Right. You know, I'm just giving them the evidence. So if someone says, for God's sake, governor, well, they're not moaning at me. And I just say, well, you know, sorry, you asked us to give you the truth. That's right. The truth. What you choose to do with that truth is entirely up to you. The danger is, by the time we finish an investigation, probably the whole art world knows what we're working on. So if that person then tries to continue their journey with that piece, the art world will go, oh, no, it's not, because we know Curtis was on that. So we've had people be aggressive, like Les Paul Man, but they're probably just angry with themselves.
Yeah.
Because they can't be angry with me, because all we're doing is, what could you find out whether this is, yes, I can, it's not.
Right.
Well, you can't be angry with me for that. We've had quite a lot of people, only in America, I have to say, I'm going to sue you.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, sue me for being honest. Yeah. Well, over 35 years, no one actually ever has. Because there's nothing to sue us for.
Right.
You know, I think sometimes what happens is we can be a bit blunt about it sometimes. Right. You know, if someone starts becoming an idiot, you can say, look, it's only the truth. And if you want to sue us, sue us for being honest. Yeah, okay, that's going to go down really well in court.
Right.
And that's going to cost you $300 an hour with your solicitor, and you're going to look a twit.
Yeah.
So, brilliant. Well, in fact, give me your solicitor's details. I'll write to him now. So we don't have a problem if someone's miserable about it or aggressive about it, because as long as we feel like we've done our job to the best of our ability, and as long as we give them a solid end of story conclusion that finishes their journey.
Yeah.
And if they're, you know, and of course they're going to be disappointed. Just some people, I guess, are disappointed and they're nice, and some people are disappointed and they're not.
Yeah. It seems like kind of a whirlwind job. Is there a typical day to day? Like, do you have like a 9 to 5? I mean, it's not 9 to 5, but I mean, do you have?
No, not really. What happens? So I'll give you a really sort of quick 1 minute overview of an investigation. Okay. So in comes the email. I'll give you an example of something we've done, a couple of them. So in comes the email from Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. We say, what is it? And it could be a Picasso. Mm-hmm. There looks like there's sufficient reason to get on an aeroplane. Mm-hmm. So we say to the person, yes, it has a 50-50 chance of being genuine, mm-hmm. but until we see it, until we start working on it, we can't be sure. But visually, from a photograph, mm-hmm. it very well could be. And we've looked at roughly the provenance, it could be. Mm-hmm. So, and also, we've never been to Saudi Arabia. So, of course, you're going to say yes.
Yes.
So there we are. So we do a little bit of preliminary due diligence by just looking at the history of the person who's phoned us, really. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because quite often the person who we are dealing with can sometimes take you on a journey before you even start. Are they honest? Where did they get it from?
Okay.
What's the situation it's got into their hands? Mm-hmm. Are they in a financial position to have owned it based on the story they've told us?
Right.
So we need to make sure that the person is okay. Then we go on a plane. And then we go to see it and we spend some time with it. Now, that means probably a few hours. We're mm-hmm. doing normally non-invasive testing. And we're also, Andy is there, who is the guy that I've worked with for 35 years. His job is to interrogate the owner. So yeah. to ask the same question 50 times, just to see if it sounds true. My job is to go over the painting and make my notes, mm-hmm. and then we go away. So we've been to Riyadh, we were in Riyadh a couple of days, spent some time with the painting, spent some time with the owner, got to know the situation, and we come away. Once we come away, we then sit down and we put together some sort of plan, some sort of model that's mm-hmm. going to get us from A to B. Mm-hmm. Generally, especially after all the time we've done it, you get to be able to work out how roughly long that's going to take, mm-hmm. how many hours you're going to put into it, because you're not working every day on it. You're not working every hour on it. Mm-hmm. So you're only saying to the customer, look, I'll charge you 100 hours or 150 hours or whatever,
right.
Because we know over the course of 3 months, that's all we need, 4 months. And then we get on with that plan. And quite often to start with, what you're doing is you're scattergunning mm-hmm. lots and lots of questions going out in the hope that some of the questions coming back, it's stakes and ladders, takes you on to the next ladder. Sometimes you go down a snake, sometimes. But if we think we aren't going to come to a conclusion for whatever reason, we will not get on an aeroplane.
Right.
Because it's a waste of our time. You know, people say, God, it's so glamorous. All you're doing is traveling around the world.
Right.
Yes, it is. But you try sitting at Boston Airport 2 weeks ago for 11 hours because right. our plane broke down.
Right.
You know, I don't care whether you're sitting in economy, the hold, or first class.
Right.
It's still pretty boring.
Yeah.
So we don't travel unless we believe that we can get to a conclusion at the end. Over the course of the investigation, we may have to travel again mm-hmm. because, for example, we're looking at a painting, and we think the answer to this painting is very probably in a place called Matera in Italy. Mm-hmm. We think it was hidden there during the war, and we think we know where we can get the information. So we're off there. And then we're off to Norway about another piece because we think the family in Norway owned something. So quite often you travel to see a piece, but then there's some traveling in between before you get to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And then what happens over the course of the first few weeks or the first couple of months is there comes a tipping point. And you'll get some information back and you'll say, ha-ha, eureka, uh-huh. we know where we're going. And it could be one of three things. It could be caught them. It's a forgery. Mm-hmm. It could be second, perfect. It looks like this is going to be genuine. Or third, it could be that frustrating thing of, right, we're one ladder up now. We need to get to the next. So at some point, there'll be a tipping point where you know either that's the end or it's worth continuing because you either are certain you're going to get a conclusion positive conclusion, or your instinct after 35 years says, yeah, we're getting there now. So sometimes we're in the office, not that we have an office, but sometimes we're sitting down saying, right, what do we do now? What's next? Where, who do we speak to? How about that? Right. Sometimes we're on a plane. And sometimes, you know, when you're not doing that, you have to just forget about everything and just walk the dog.
Yeah.
Because I think our work can be quite intense, you know, for lots of reasons. One, because we cannot afford to be wrong, A. B, we cannot afford ever to present any information that isn't 100% accurate.
Right.
And thirdly, 99.9% of the time, our final conclusion either makes something worth $500 million or nothing.
Right.
So the pressure's on a bit, mm-hmm. because we absolutely cannot afford to get it even slightly wrong. Right. So some days, you know, you get 3 or 4 hours into it and you kind of think, right, that's it, done. Not doing any more today. And I'll walk the dog across the fields and I'll bake a cake or I'll cook a roast dinner and I won't even think about it. So we don't have a typical day or week. We have a typical structure mm-hmm. that we work to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, half the fun is the fact we don't have a working routine. You know, I think that's the great thing. I think we don't have every investigation is different. And we say all the time, when we get back on a plane, the things we've seen and the things we get up to, we say, if you tell the kids that back home, they wouldn't believe you.
Yeah.
You know, because the amount of kids' stories, you know, we were sitting at the Beverly Hills Hotel with Nicolas Cage once. It was just the most bizarre situation.
Breaking up.
Easy, and they can't, it was bad. And we went back home, they wouldn't believe you, would they? We just keep firing.
You're breaking up, Curtis. I'm sorry.
Sort of money, it can get. Okay.
Curtis, I'm sorry, you're breaking up.
We're back.
I think so.
Yeah, it looks like it. It's just.
Okay, sorry.
There we are.
We're back.
That's all right.
Cool.
We're back. So there we go. We don't have a routine. We don't have a routine, but we have a model we work to. There you go. And that's the short answer.
Awesome. I love it. And real quick, between the cases that you're working on, how consistent are they, I guess?
How do you mean? I answer that.
If you're working.
How do you mean how consistent?
How long time goes between when you're working on one case and another case? Like if you're working on a big case and then does another case come right behind it? Or are you working on, working on multiple cases?
Yeah, it's multiple. There's lots of reasons for that, actually. For example, we've got 3 paintings by the same artist at the moment. And another 2 cases. So we're juggling 5 mm-hmm. because you, as I say, quite often will come back from somewhere having seen something mm-hmm. and then there'll be a request to look at a painting by the same artist. And it makes sense because that way you're not duplicating efforts and you're actually saving time and effort and money for a customer by saying, we're doing one of them, bring it on. Mm-hmm. And also sometimes with a painting, there's one particular painting out in California. We need one piece of information. We've got one piece of information we absolutely have to get, and we know where it's coming from, mm-hmm. but we haven't been able to tie it down, which basically means that case is live, mm-hmm. but we've had to shelve it until we can get to see the person who is going to be the key. So it's quite often, maybe one in 10 times, a case like this one in California, you have to shelve for 3 or 4 months, and then you spend a solid week on it and it's done. The other 3 or 4 that we're working on, you do bits here and there because you hit the ball and you wait for the ball to come back. So you can afford to juggle 3 or 4 at the same time. And then what we do is we kind of work out roughly what when we think they're going to conclude. And then we book our new projects accordingly. So we know we've got one finishing, so we've booked a new project. We had this fabulous painting in Santa Fe. We were in Santa Fe as well twice last month. And we know that's concluding very soon, so we can say yes to another one for January. So we've probably always got 4 or 5 on the go at one time.
Awesome. Well, Curtis, this has been amazing. I'm so glad we made this work. I'm so glad you took the time out of your really busy schedule to talk to me. This has been amazing.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your time as well.
Thank you so much, Curtis, and hope you have a wonderful rest of the day.
You too. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. So I'll let you know.
Thank you so much to Curtis Dowling for chatting with me. This was fabulous. If you want to see more of Curtis, check out Treasure Detectives on CNBC or check out his website, curtisdowling.co.uk. As always, if you liked this episode, please give me a like or a share. Thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production. Music by Corey Knoxville.